Hi, this is Justin from Broken Love. You're listening to Jay Scott, The Hook Rocks.
It's Jay Scott. It's The Hook Rocks, the ultimate rock me podcast. Hope you're all doing well in this month of August, the dog days of summer, as they call it. We're starting to see the Halloween spirit, Halloween decoration and costume stores popping up all over the place. And fall is going to be here before we know it. Football season will be here before we know it. The World Series, hockey. Fall is always the greatest time for sports, in my opinion. Big sports fan here, but you did not tune in to talk sports. You tuned in to talk some rock and roll, and that's what we're going to do. As I always mention, we're part of the Pantheon Podcast Network, a great network of music-related podcasts. There's something for everyone's taste in music. Every type of genre is pretty much represented on the Pantheon Podcast platform, and you can find them on pantheonpodcast.com and also social media, Pantheon Pods. You can check out my friends, as I always mention, before every episode. Tom and Zeus from the Shout Out Loudcast, the number one rated Kiss podcast in the universe. I got Mac from the Ugly American Werewolf in London podcast. Martin Popoff, the rock historian, the legendary DJ Mistress Carrie, as well as Chris and Aaron from Decibel Geek. So check out all those and more podcasts on Pantheon Podcast. You can also check out The Hook Rocks on all social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, as well as streaming on all podcast platforms, whether it's Apple, Spotify, or Amazon. We're available everywhere. So check us out. We've had some great episodes over the last couple of months. We had some great new music spotlights with Broken Love, with Griffin Tucker from Classless Act. We also had The Warning back on as well, and a great band from Detroit called Frame 42. So check them out. They're a rising band too. Bunch of young kids who are making some great music. Also, we had Stephen Piercy celebrating our 3-year anniversary, and we also celebrate our 400th episode with my friends in the Groove Council, our private chat group that discusses new music all the time. So check out that episode. Check out Christine Eagle. She was just on talking about the back end of the music business. No one knows that better than her. She's so well researched. She talks about the ever-changing algorithms on Facebook, the cloudy future of TikTok, the future of NAMM, the great music conference in Los Angeles, as well as many other things. And we've got some great stuff in store coming up as well on the commentary side of our podcast. But without further ado, I'd like to welcome in a good friend of mine, as I just mentioned, the Shout Out Loudcast. It is the co-host of the podcast, the Boston Bomber, the great Kiss podcast you got to check out. They have great shows. It's not your typical Kiss podcast where they talk about the glory days and they, you know, lick the bottoms of each Kiss member. They are realists. They are refreshing in that they really talk in an honest forum. Here's Zeus on the show, on the Hook Rocks podcast. What's going on, Zeus? How are you?
I'm great. Always a pleasure. We talk so much off the air. It's nice to be back on the air together.
It is, man. You know, it was great to finally connect with you and Tom and others on the Creatures Fest at the Creatures Fest. We had a blast that weekend getting to know each other and annoying the piss out of each other.
Yes. Fucking hilarious stuff. I'm sorry.
Oh, man.
Hilarious.
Do you want to share the elevator story, or do you want to keep that top secret?
No, I mean, just saying, I think people know, and if they're not, if they don't, let me surprise them some other event that we'll be at.
Okay.
And be like, what the hell is that? And they'll wonder if I was at that event. You know, yes. they'll figure it out.
Was it real, or is Zeus here? Will be the question.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, actually. But we get together every once in a while, and we also have you on with our Zeppelin Chronicle show that we do. We go through the Zeppelin catalog, and we're at Zeppelin 2, as people joke. I'll see you at the holidays, and we're getting into the fall, and so you never know. But we're up to Zeppelin 2. We just finished Zeppelin 2. And we'll get into Zeppelin 3 soon, which I can't wait.
Yeah, I can't wait either. I love doing that because it's a refreshing change of the pace of both of our podcasts.
Yes.
We really dive deep into Zeppelin and examine the albums and examine what was happening during that time of, in my opinion, the greatest rock band of all time. And yeah, you know, we like to be on more of a stringent schedule, but, you know, life happens and we all got stuff going on. So we try to record whenever we can. But whenever we do, it's always a great episode. I like the spirited debate that we had last time. We really got into it. We don't purposely disagree with each other, but we're very passionate. All four of us are very passionate, whether it's Tom, Murph, you or me. It's a great way to hear someone's perspective and hear why they disagree and hear why they're so passionate about it.
And we're still at the point where we haven't figured out each other's like habits or go-to as far as Zeppelin goes. So we have no idea. We don't have like teams like, oh, I know that these tracks are the ones that Murph and Tom are going to like, and Zeus and Jay are going to be all over those. I have no idea. I have no idea. And that's the fun of it, hearing everybody else break down these songs. And it's Zeppelin. What could be a throwaway for me could be your favorite Zeppelin song of all time. They're that impactful. And It's a fun conversation. And because it's Zeppelin, we can't wing it. Can't be like, hey, let's do Zeppelin today. Now, we may know these songs, but you can't talk about Led Zeppelin and just throw it together. We put our research into it, and we work hard on those episodes. And I think it shows.
Yeah. I mean, when you hear that stuff, it's years of collecting knowledge of what the band is about. The band is so diverse. When you think of the band and how what they started in the late 60s to how they ended in 1980, look at the transformation from album to album, from beginning to end. You know, it's a band that keeps evolving. Their music keeps evolving to this day. The songs sound different as you listen to them, as you evolve as a person, as people evolve as people. It's such an interesting band, and they keep remaining as interesting because of the music, because of the arrangements, because of how they put it all together. They're just absolutely amazing.
Yeah. The leadership changes, who takes control over a certain album, that changes. And, you know, you can't, every album is different. I know it sounds cliche, but it really is when you talk about Zeppelin. Yeah. And what's funny is this discussion we're going to have today, we're going to be going back to Zeppelin for a couple times. I just have a feeling.
Yes, because we're doing a Whitesnake Legacy show, which the last Legacy show we did was with Sidney Taylor. We did Rat in the month of June, which was a very well-received episode. And these episodes do attract a lot of listeners. And because we really break down the band, it's always fun to discuss music and bands and artists that we're in love with, we fell in love with when we were younger, we used to listen to. This band's different than the ones we've done before. I mean, we've done a lot of different bands. We've done Metallica, Maiden, Rat, Dokken, so many others. But this band really has a lot of different lives, a lot of different styles of music within one band. And it's a band that's it's very complicated with how they started, with all the band members moving in and out. And we're going to get into it. And we're really going to focus on the early part, because Zeus and I are big fans of the early days of Whitesnake And that doesn't mean it's 1987 and after that, because a lot of people came in that.
No,
there is almost a 10-year history, or probably, yeah, over 10-year history of the band prior to that album. And I talk about the 87 self-titled album, which is by far their biggest in their catalog and the album that they're known for. But what's really disappointing for Zeus and I, because we've talked about this offline, is the lack of appreciation for those early Whitesnake albums, that if you are a Zeppelin fan, and if you are a Deep Purple fan, if you are a Faces fan, you will enjoy this stuff. You will revisit these things. Hopefully you'll revisit after this discussion and realize how good this band was during the early years.
I always like to think of Whitesnake as a couple different things. First, they're like Rainbow. There's almost different bands, the same band, but completely different music in certain eras. And so you can't say, you know, it's not AC/DC, where the vocals might be a little different when they get their new singer coming in, replacing Bon Scott. But the music's really the same, Brian Johnson and Bon Scott. The three singers in Rainbow, different eras, different types of music. Whitesnake, you go the first, I don't know, I think it's six. If you count in the EP, maybe you'd say seven. I don't know if you'd count Slide It In there. That was a little bit different. Or just a completely different style, really, than Slide It In, Whitesnake, and Slip of the Tongue, and everything afterwards. And even everything afterwards is different a little bit than Whitesnake and Slip of the Tongue. You can come into this and think one thing of Whitesnake and be completely blown and be like, that's the band? Yeah, and that's what, if you look at their catalog, that's the most of their music was like. This different style of blues rock that they were producing in England for years before they broke out in United States, in North America. Now, the other thing I like to do with Whitesnake is, it's like a football coach's tree. You're going to take Black Sabbath, Rainbow, Whitesnake, and Deep Purple, and then count the members that have been in two of those bands. Or if you want to, yeah, and you include Dio in there too, if you want. Insane.
Yeah. No, it absolutely is. The band really, obviously the focal member of the band is David Coverdale. Yeah. And he replaced, he was the replacement singer in Deep Purple after Ian Gillan was the original singer for Deep Purple. He was on the Burn album, the Stormbringer album, as well as Come Taste the Band. And prior to Deep Purple, David Coverdale was this struggling musician, struggling singer in England. He was a hairdresser. And he got the call to come in and audition for Deep Purple after Ian left. And they decided to share vocals between the great bass player Glenn Hughes and David Coverdale. I like the Coverdale era of Purple more than the Ian era of Deep Purple. I like that R&B flair that doesn't really happen prior to David and Glenn Hughes joining the band. So Burn and Stormbringer, love those two albums. Love those two albums.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I think Stormbringer is the creation of Rainbow after that, when basically Ritchie Blackmore is like, I'm not doing this R&B shit. And it's funny, because everyone knows of Ritchie as the guitar god, Deep Purple. And you would think like he would have this power to say, we're doing this, I'm doing this. Or is it because he's so mercurial and so weird and strange, he just left his own band? He just like, I'm out of here. And he goes off and runs off and steals everybody from Elf, including Dio, and creates Rainbow. And I don't know, it's the style there, but along the way becomes this long-term rivalry between David Coverdale and Ritchie Blackmore. And for years, they would compare those Rainbow albums and Whitesnake albums. Who's doing better? What's going on over there? And I'm not sure, but I could have sworn I heard that recently they made up. But it's fascinating stuff. It really is.
Yeah, absolutely. When you think of Purple People talk about Zeppelin and Black Sabbath as being the forefathers of heavy metal and hard rock. Deep Purple is probably right underneath both of those bands,
yeah,
in terms of the influence, in terms of, you know, the style of that music that came afterwards. And they were, you know, they were along with that Sabbath-y Zeppelin type of sound. They had the organ that Zeppelin had, but, you know, Sabbath really didn't have much influence with that, you know, that style, but Purple and had it the most, and Zeppelin dabbled in it on songs here and there, on albums here and there. But those three were really the forefathers of rock and heavy metal. And then they had a changeover with the singers. David Coverdale came in. They changed over the bass player. Glenn Hughes came in. They had these three albums that were very R&B-ish, bluesy, more bluesy than the previous albums. And Ritchie Blackmore, who does have a reputation of being difficult, decided to take his ball and go home and start Rainbow. And that last album with David Coverdale was with Tommy Bolin, the legendary guitar player. They disbanded after that. Deep Purple didn't put out an album, I think, till the mid-80s, which was Perfect Strangers, which was in large part the original members of the band. But
yeah, David, that was 84.
Yeah. But David Coverdale started with a solo album. And he had a couple solo albums, and one of those solo albums was called Whitesnake. But
that was two words.
Yes, very good point. It was two words. And through all that, through the musicians that he was recording with and playing with in the UK, and the musicians that he went with, he always wanted to have another band. And that was what happened after the Whitesnake, two words, started. But it was called originally David Coverdale's Whitesnake on the first album, which I believe was called Snakebite.
Yeah. So you're talking about the EP.
Yes.
So they took, what they did is, before they would sign them, the record company basically is like, I'm not sure. And then they put out the EP, and then they took four songs from one of his solo albums, threw that on there as well. So then that came out, which has got a few really good songs that, at least for me, that I really like, and I wish they would play them and people would get to know some of these songs because they're really good. Steal Away is one of them. If you get a chance to listen to that off Snakebite, you'll really enjoy it. So that was the EP that came out in 78. So I believe his two solo albums came out in 77 and 78, the last being in March. And then he releases the EP, and then they come out in October, because I think the EP was in June, and then in October they release Trouble, the first actual album.
And for those that had never heard Trouble, again, it's a great throwback to the blues influences that David has. When you hear, and it goes on throughout these early albums up until that 87 album, where the blues influence is so rich and so deep, you know, the Delta blues, the feel of the records. I mean, it's just, it's a blues band. It's a incredible, deep influenced blues band that maybe doesn't have the R&B, the rhythm and blues flair, although there's elements of it, not as much as it was on Burn or Stormbringer, but it really kind of brings it home. And the early years, starting with Trouble, starting with David Coverdale's Snakebite EP, they were building success in the UK, in Europe, Japan, but they could never find it in the US. And it continued on throughout these albums. The album Trouble, which I love, and it's a great place to start, obviously has the Day Tripper, John Lennon, Paul McCartney cover, which is really interesting. The title track is one of my favorite songs too as well. And I also like Take Me With You, which was written by David and Mick Moody. And Mick Moody, who was the guitar player, was really a essential part in David Coverdale's journey to really kind of push him to form this band called Whitesnake.
Yeah, so they basically came back, combined the both words. I like David Coverdale saying, he said, well, I'm white. If I was born in Africa, my band would be called Black Snake, whatever. But, and that's the kind of reputation and I guess the knock is what you would say about him and his salacious sexual innuendos and constant lyrics, which all are about sex and stuff. But, as far as Trouble, I like Lie Down. I think that's a great song. A modern love song. I think that's great. But what they started off with is Mick Moody was on his two solo albums. So he brings in Mick Moody. He brings in Bernie Marsden. Now it's the tradition that starts right from the top, the two guitar attack, two great guitarists. And that stays throughout Whitesnake's history, I believe. Bernie Marsden's a fantastic guitar player. Fantastic. I think he was in UFO before.
Yes.
Mick Moody is a great songwriter and helps him out. And Marsden writes some songs as well. The great Neil Murray, who's on almost all their albums going up to 87, with the exception, I think, one. And then they start with David Dowell on drums. And the great John Lord from Deep Purple comes on over. Now, John Lord is one of those only like keyboard players that I don't mind, you know? He ain't the Kiss Crazy Nights keyboard player, right?
Yeah.
It's not that annoying stuff that hides guitars and, you know, and it's just, he's a great player. And there are so many things where all of a sudden he goes off on a tangent and he starts doing a little solo and you get into it. He's really that good. And he's always been that good.
Yeah. They're creating a sound and the essence of the band is, like I said, very rich in blues and phenomenal. When you hear these songs and you hear what comes after in their career, I know David, you know, kept wanting to attack North America throughout the early days. They did have some success as they went on, and we'll get into that. But, you know, what it didn't start maybe with Snakebite, you know, with that EP, it definitely begins here with Trouble. And as we move forward with the band then comes out and releases Love Hunter, which another great sexual innuendo, the album covers. When you see some of these old album covers with Whitesnake, and then you see the videos on the 87 album, it all makes sense. It all makes sense.
You're like, what's the running theme? Like, what is the connection between the 87 album and the beginning days? It's Coverdale. This is all Coverdale's sexual, like, ideas and thoughts and stuff. That cover with the naked woman straddling this huge python or whatever that is. it's out there. It's one of those, like, clever, like, scorpions in that time frame covers. And you know, it's pushing the envelope.
It definitely does. It definitely does push the envelope. But that's part of the lore of the early Whitesnake stuff. You know, after slide it in, it became very, the covers became more kind of vanilla with the logo, with the new logo, because the old logo, the classic logo, as you see on these albums, is more of a cursive style Whitesnake with, you know, leading with the snake head into the W, and they changed it as the WS on the 87 album. But that old logo, I love that old logo.
Yes, I do love it.
Yeah, it's awesome.
They never should have changed it.
I agree.
One other thing I wanted to mention is we didn't bring it up, but starting from that first album, Martin Birch does all their producing, basically all the way up, for many albums. And Martin Birch is a great, great producer. He's done Iron Maiden, Deep Purple, just a bunch of bands. And he's you know, the first two albums right off the bat, he's there. And so that's a running theme there too.
Yeah, a lot of those UK guys, whether producers or engineers, you know, really were a tight knit group of people. You know, they appear on, like you said, Maiden is Maiden. Really rose to prominence in the 80s. You know, some of these guys also, you know, appeared on the Purple stuff as well, and other groups, but they were very, very integral with a lot of bands that were rising up. And really, when you think of the 70s, especially the early part and throughout, the bands in the UK, although there were bands like Kiss and Aerosmith and others as well, but when you talk about hard rock, you talk about heavy metal, the UK really was they really were at the forefront of hard rock and heavy metal throughout that whole decade.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. So the album itself with the album cover, again, check it out if you've never seen it. A lot of you will remember these album covers thumbing through them in record stores back in the 80s. Because when the 87 album came out, it caused a resurgence and a lot of their early stuff was re-released here in America.
Yep.
So I remember going to get the, you know, God, how old was I? 87, I was 12, at the very beginning of puberty, thumbing through the Whitesnake stuff and seeing these album covers and just knowing I could never bring this home. I could never bring these albums inside this house because I don't know what's going on with the snake and this naked woman. But growing up in an Irish Italian Catholic family outside of Chicago, that would have been big trouble.
Yeah, I'm the same way like you. As soon as Whitesnake was the first concert I think I ever saw. I was a freshman in high school. My brother took me and I saw Whitesnake and Great White opening up. It was the first concert I ever walked into. And I remember having the debate with my brother's friends and me. I remember sitting in the back seat of the car, them giving me a couple of beers and, you know, trying to act like a tough guy. And I remember arguing like this band's better than Zeppelin. And this was my mentality at the time. Zeppelin was harder to get into than Whitesnake.
Yeah.
And here's why. If you look at the song tracks from the first couple of albums, okay? So I did, and I think Love Hunter, the song itself, is the Love Hunter, the song itself, is the longest song, and that's at 5:38. These were shorter songs. There were no epics. There was no quarter on this. There's no Achilles Last Stand. These are blues songs, but hard rock blues songs that were done in 3 to 4 minutes. Easier to swallow, easier to get into. The formula in the first couple albums, actually all the way through up until Slide It In, straight rock and roll blues. And, awesome vocals, great dual guitar attack, and a fantastic rhythm section. Lyrics, bluesy, women, sex, things like that. And they're continuing that trend on this second album. Now, for this album, I would say this is probably one of my favorite, if not the favorite, of the early albums. Long Way From Home, which is a video online. You can catch it. And you're like, oh my goodness, take a look at this band. You know, you start noticing the stupid hats they are all wearing in the band and the mustaches. And then you realize, yeah, no wonder he switched it up to get big in the US because that wasn't going to fly. Long Way From Home is a great song. Walking in the Shadow of the Blues, loves to brag about the blues, talking about his story. I love the blues. They tell my story. Oh my God. He's really fantastic. And then those riffs like Steal Away on the first EP and stuff that comes up on Slide It In that, you know, Come and Get It, even in on 87, those riffs, Medicine Man has that same classic Whitesnake riff that you'll know what I mean. The stops and stutters and the drums and the crunchy guitars. Awesome. I love Medicine Man. It's a fantastic song. And then obviously, Love Hunter and We Wish You Well is a great song and a closer I like. But Love Hunter is a great tune.
And I love Rock and Roll Women too as well.
Yeah, yeah. There's another one. See, this album really sticks out. No, I don't think there's anything. Help Me Through the Day's nice little bluesy tune too. There's no weak really songs on this album. One of my favorites.
And if you get the updated remastered version, there's some bonus tracks too as well, which also includes Ain't No Love in the Heart of the City. Oh. Which was off the David Coverdale Snakebite EP, was an official Whitesnake album. It kind of was, kind of wasn't. But that's a great cover song that was originally appeared on the Bobby Blue Band for the ABC Dunhill album Dreamer. It's a 1974 R&B song, which is just a great track. And really, throughout these early days, even though it was a cover, was a song that was resonating across the globe, just because their version is very good. Their live version of it is phenomenal. I'm glad they included it on the bonus tracks for this, on the remastered version. But it's one of the very unappreciated, unknown Zeppelin, I'm sorry, Whitesnake.
There album. You go.
Whitesnake songs that people don't really recognize. And obviously, you know, we heard the news earlier this week or late last week when David Coverdale announced that he won't be, or Whitesnake won't be performing with Scorpions because of health issues, which I believe is an upper respiratory issue that he's having.
Yeah, it's too bad.
But when they play live, it's too bad that they don't play some of this stuff, even a song or two. I think a lot of people would kind of be like deer in the headlights because they never heard it. But it's some stuff that really, hopefully someday, it's highly unlikely at this point. Who knows if Whitesnake will get back on the road and tour. You know, I it's kind of tough to see David Coverdale, one of the amazing frontmen of rock and roll, in rock and roll history, go out this way. I kind of know he probably wanted to go out on his own terms, but he is 72. And, you know, even before the health issues, he announced that this was it. So once he overcomes this, which we all hope he does, will he have the stamina? Will he have the motivation to go back out and tour? That's still an unknown.
Yeah, it will be too bad if that's how they end up and they just go out because of this. But again, if you look at these tracks and you look what they're starting off, he's setting a good precedent. But I will tell you this. Ain't No Love in the Heart of the City is like my shandy. He plays that like that's on all every live album they have. They play it. It's the same fucking thing over and over. It's just, oh God. It sounds like you really enjoy it. So I'm hate to put a damper on it, but it's so, I don't know. It's like, I can respect it. It's like, since I've been loving you from Zeppelin 3, which we'll talk about coming up. Great tune. I love it and stuff. Oh, Ain't No Love in Heart of City. And he loves this song. He puts it on everything. And I remember when we all got back into when we discovered Whitesnake, and you go back and you stop buying all their older stuff. And I remember, you know, you see the videos, right? And I'm like, oh, Whitesnake Live, Ain't No Love in the Heart of the City. And I bought their live album. I'm like, who the hell are these people? Like, who's that fat guy in the front? Who's this idiot with the Kangol hat? Who's this idiot with like the stupid cap he's got on? And I'm like, who are these people? And no idea that it's not like Adrian Vandenberg and, you know, Vivian Campbell and Rudy Sarzo on them with, you know, the 80s hairdo, you know?
Well, when you look at that 87 album, which, by the way, everyone on that album, that picture, all those press photos, none of those people play on that 87 album, which is, except Adrian Vandenberg, he does the solo and Here I Go Again. That's the only person in those videos that actually plays on the album. But to get to your point, this is a great band. This is a band full of great musicians who make great music and great songs with zero image. They have zero image. And this, again, was the reason why they were never able to get their foot in the door in the U.S. because they looked like a blues bar band at the time. You know, they didn't really have, I mean, even Coverdale's image was very subdued back then. You know, whether he dressed in a lot of black and a lot of his stuff, but, you know, he really hadn't, what's the right word I'm trying to use? He really hadn't accepted the need to have an image, especially for a front man. You know, back in the 70s, you could get on stage in jeans and, you know, whatever, and have a little bit of an image, but you know, when you think of bands like, you know, Zeppelin, you know, Zeppelin was really the first band to kind of really have that, you know, image. The Stones, you know, were just guys playing blues. You know, the Beatles obviously had the suits and they kind of had their image. But for whatever reason, Whitesnake didn't really accept the fact that they needed to have an image if they wanted to move beyond the UK and in Europe.
Yeah, not to get off too much of a detour, but that's the whole thing that happened is when you get those 70s bands and they try to make it in the 80s in the United States and they can't come over because the image. Well, some bands were able to do it, Genesis, ZZ Top, and change and go along and get the MTV generation. Whitesnake was not going to come over with mustaches like Uriah Heep, UFO, yeah, and bands like that. They're not going to come over and be able to translate onto MTV now at this stage. They have to change the image. But at this time, thankfully, it was all about the music. And with the music, I think they're on a roll. But rock and roll in that new wave of British heavy metal was picking up in overseas, but it was kind of a dark time with the exception of Van Halen around this time in the US. And you got Rod, you got Kiss, you got Rolling Stones all putting out disco type tunes. It wasn't really a big healthy rock, sound and type of music going on in the scene back then.
No, it wasn't. No. And really, from these first couple albums, they really kind of found their footing with the next album, Ready and Willing, which is my second favorite album from the early days from Whitesnake. Love this album. Love the fact that they were really starting to climb the charts in the UK. And even in the US, they just were able to get in the top 100. With this album, it does feature the original version of Fool for Your Lovin', which later appeared on the Slip of the Tongue album.
You mean the better version?
With Steve Vai? I'm not going to make that. No.
This is the better version.
Yes. This
with
is the
Mickey
better
Moody and Bernie Marsden.
Yes.
They absolutely do a better job.
Yeah. I have a problem with that Slip of the Tongue album for a couple reasons. We'll get into it as we talk about it. But Fool for Your Lovin' was the first track, and this was really the first single that really started to get, you know, help them get their footing as a band to be reckoned with. But just some, you know, their title track, Ready and Willing, Blind Man was a great song too, which I think also appeared on one of David Coverdale's solo albums. Ain't Gonna Cry No More, great tune. She's a Woman, another great tune as well. Again, they've got some remastered bonus tracks. And to Zeus's point, there's another version of Ain't No Love in the Heart of the City.
They threw that on everything.
And it's also got Mistreated, which was on, I believe, the Burn album as well. So that's a nice treat that they played. And this is the first album that features another Deep Purple member, Ian Paice.
Yeah, so he comes on board. So now you got three Deep Purple members now in the band. And what's starting to come up and become an issue is the treatment that the Deep Purple members in Whitesnake are getting versus the original Whitesnake members, the Bernie Marsdens, Mick Moody's, and Neil Murray's. And there's some conflict brewing because he's paying them more, John Lord and obviously Ian Paice. The other song I really like is Carry Your Load. The whole album, again, they're just a bunch of very good rock blues songs. So if you haven't discovered this discography of the earlier stuff, put them on. I'm telling you, you're going to like it, really like it. And the Fool for Your Lovin' is a great example. So much more. There's a video for it too. It's like night and day. Watch this video and then watch the other video with Steve Vai and Vandenberg. And they're all doing everything is so slick and polished and like hair and image versus another, the original image of them playing a live, like a live track of this and just them kicking ass and just the dual guitar of Marsden and Moody. I just think is so much better, but That's just me.
Yeah, no, I love this album. It's one that I recommend if you're, I mean, any, you can't go wrong with any of these, but you know, with the one that Zeusius mentioned, Love Hunter or Ready and Willing, if you want to start with either one of these, when you talk in the early days of Whitesnake, you can't go wrong with either one. Both phenomenal albums, and just be prepared. It's going to be different. It's not going to be the power chords. It's not going to be the big hooks. It's not going to be the sleekness that Zeus mentioned. It's a blues, a rock blues album. So, or all these albums, I should say, are. But yeah, no, this is an album that really kind of, again, started the path to success, or the journey to success for Whitesnake in the U.S. They followed this up with a live album, Live in the Heart of the City. Now, the 70s is known as a decade of live albums. This one always gets forgotten, and it shouldn't, because it's a fantastic live album.
I like it. I had it when I, again, when I got into Whitesnake, I went back and bought all their, at the time, they were cassettes. So I had this cassette. And I got on it, and I'm like, I remember that I was laughing about the cover, and I'm looking, I'm like, is that like fat Jimmy Page there with the double Gibson there? Have you ever seen, you've seen the cover?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Bernie Marsden. It's just, you know, he's wailing on the dual neck Gibson there. And Marsden's got his, I don't know, Pitfall character from Atari hat. It's just, I'm like, who the hell are these people?
If you want to get a clear image of what they were about during these times, think 38 Special meets Foghat meets the Doobie Brothers.
Yeah, the Doobie Brothers is a great example of it.
Yeah.
Except I think Whitesnake has better songs.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. But their image did not fit their music.
No.
And that was the issue. That was the issue. But if you're looking for a great live album that you haven't picked up that was released in the 70s, actually, this was released in the 80s. That's maybe the why it doesn't.
1980, I think it was.
Yeah, maybe that's why it doesn't get included. But it features all the 70s tunes and everything. So it is a great, great live album. So I highly do recommend. Then came Come and Get It, which I know you like.
Oh, I love this.
This hit number 2 on the UK charts. The only reason why it didn't was because of Adam and the Ants, King of the Wild Frontier. Jeez. But this song feature, or this album features a song, Don't Break My Heart Again.
Oh, beautiful song.
Which was then re-recorded for the 87 album and released as a B-side to, I believe, Here I Go Again. So that originally, and Whitesnake, as we move on and we start to talk about their music, you're going to see a lot of this stuff show up on earlier albums that was later re-recorded for the newer sounding albums.
Yeah, they actually did a video for it too, as well, which is great. Again, the song is one of my favorite Whitesnake songs. I could go down this. I mean, I love this whole album, but if you really want to pick out songs, Don't Break My Heart Again. Wine Women's Song is a ton of fun. The whole piano on that is fantastic. Would I Lie to You? And that ending track, Till the Day I Die, top 5 Whitesnake track for me of all time. Absolutely love it. During COVID, I didn't even know David Coverdale could pick up a guitar. He's one of those guys that I never want to see a guitar in his hand. It doesn't fit the image. Like Robert Plant, don't put a guitar in your hand. Mick Jagger, him, Eddie Vedder. I don't know who gave them the ideas to put a guitar on them sometimes. Like, they don't need you. Take that off. You look ridiculous. But during COVID, David Coverdale would sing some songs. I don't know if you remember, if you followed him. And he would do like a couple songs, and he did Till the Day I Die. And he played it, you know, on an acoustic guitar, and he played it. I was just like, holy shit. Do you know how obscure this is that he's doing this right now? Loved it. It's a great tune in the, you know, acoustic beginning, and then boom, it hits you. Rocking guitar. same Martin Birch, same lineup right now. So they're consistent, you could say. Once they got Ian Pace in there now, they're consistent. It's going to go for a couple more albums. This album is unbelievable. It's, I would say, my probably favorite Whitesnake album of all time. I will put it way above 87. I don't know about Slide It In and right, you know, not too far ahead of Love Hunter, but Come and Get It. It's a fantastic album.
It is. And I also want to include What I Lied to You is a great song, too, well. Yeah, yeah. And Lonely Days, Lonely Nights, I like, too, as well. It's just all these albums have this vibe that it's hard to explain what it's like, because it's not the power of Zeppelin and it's not the power of Purple, but it's got
a middle ground. And yeah. It's its own style.
Right. And absolutely. And it's, and you know, when you think of the 87 album, of how over the top that was and the subtlety that really was consistent with their early albums, I sort of appreciate that subtlety, right? You know, sometimes you don't need to prove how fast you can play guitar. Sometimes if you just play by feel, which that's probably the best way to explain these albums, is these albums are all feel. And just a tremendous, another great record, another tremendous record. Still, the U.S. charts are elusive. I know it reached the top 200, but still, if you're a band and you're trying to break into the U.S., being in the top 200 is just not going to cut it. You're not going to get the funding from management or whatever to put yourself on a tour. You're not going to, I mean, it's still true to this day. You're not going to get on a big tour with a big band if you're not cracking that top 40, which they were still unable to do. And then comes my favorite album of the early days, which is Saints and Sinners. I love this album. And again, it features an angel with snake, a naked angel with snakes wrapped around on the cover. So again, you know, the sexual innuendo, kind of sacrilegious with the angels, but, you know, Coverdale never shied away from any controversy.
Yeah, and this is the first time we started seeing the chinks in the armor.
Yeah.
Moody quits for a little bit. And, you know, he has a, if you know the story about Whitesnake, their manager, John Coletta, has a lot of influence over the band. I believe it was he had he was getting the manager side. Mm-hmm. He was getting publishing. Thank you. Sorry. Publishing as well. And he was taking a lot of money from the band. And then who wasn't would then get split, obviously, by the three big Deep Purple guys. And people were getting tired of it. And, you know, for a little bit, then Marsden quits for a little bit. And then you got all sorts of band conflict going on. And you're starting to see why that happened. And unfortunately, then they moved over to a different label now. They're going to Geffen. So some changes going on in the band here. You know, same producer. The album is, though, still mostly written by Coverdale, Marsden, and Moody as far as lyrics go. But this was probably the end of it. I think Mel Galley did some work on it. Will come up later in the band. But, you know, this is when the band was starting to fall apart. They had the first versions of Here I Go Again and Crying in the Rain. I don't know if I would say they're better versions, though, than 87.
Like a hobo version of Here I Go Again.
Yes, yes. I don't know. There's some other good songs on this album.
Victim of Love.
Yeah.
Love, Victim of Love. Love, Rough and Ready. Love, Love and Affection, which I actually love. And the title track at the end, too, as well. I love this album.
You don't like Dancing Girls?
I do like Dancing Girls, too, as well.
It's great a good too. Album. It's a very good album. But we're talking about now 82, late 82. So we're really, if you think about it, guys and girls out there that are listening, when we're really at people our age are starting us on the Motley Crues. You're getting Quiet Riots. You're getting Def Leppard. So you know what their contemporaries are in the United States. And, you know, if you hear Here I Go Again like a hobo, you're like, I'm not seeing this competing with Photograph. Right?
Yeah, Photograph was so a couple years out or a year or two away. But I know what you're saying. You're right on the cusp of more of an image-based, more image-based bands, right? More with the hair, with the good-looking guys, Def Leppard, Motley Crue, Rat, you know, all these guys coming up from L.A.
Facial hair.
Right, no facial hair, outfits, leather, spandex. You're starting to get into that, although it got out of control later on. But like you said, if you're a band like Whitesnake and you're seeing what's happening in America at this time, this is really the end unless you make a change.
Yeah.
I mean, because you're not going to do anything.
Yeah. This is the last of really this lineup.
Right.
And all of a sudden he's got to come back and do something different. And that's what comes on with the next album, which is really the transformation to the, what most people know of Whitesnake.
Right. I mean, a lot of people think this is Whitesnake's first album.
Yes.
Because, you know, it featured more of a slick sound. It featured three outstanding videos that were in rotation at MTV when MTV played videos. Again, it was their fourth top 10 album in the UK. But it was their first real breakthrough into the United States. And it's actually gone double platinum since its release. Obviously, it probably was helped by the 87 album to get those numbers.
Was.
Yeah. But it was the final album using the old logo that was known on the early albums too as well. Sold over 4 million records. It had a harder sound, but it also features two different versions. There's the UK version, and then there's the US version. And depending on what side you want to fall on, the US version featured John Sykes on guitar and
Mel Galley,
and also I believe Cozy Powell on drums. But here's the differences. So David Coverdale was the lead vocals, obviously. Mel Galley, I believe, played on both versions. Mickey Moody played guitars on the UK version. John Sykes, who left Thin Lizzy right after the death of Phil Lynott. Prior to that, he was in the new wave of British heavy metal band Tigers of Pantang. So he hops on for this. Colin Hodgkinson is the bass player in the UK version. Neil Murray plays on the US version. Cozy Powell plays drums on both, as does John Lord, plays both on the keyboards. Or Bill Cuomo, who does some additional keyboards too on the US version. But this was the first slick sounding, harder riffs, a little bit of more of an edge, still with the bluesy influence, but you could tell they were going for something different on this album. And I will say with 100% certainty for this album, there is not a bad track on Slide It In. I don't consider this the old version of Whitesnake. I consider this the new beginning of Whitesnake with the new sound, getting to the 87 album sound.
This is the transition album.
Yeah.
This is the album that fills in the gap, I think. It's I always liking this to Down to Earth by Rainbow, where the music is really similar to Dio, but the lyrics are more towards Jolyn Turner, but the singer is Graham Bonnet. It's the middle sound of Rainbow. Same here. So you still have a John Lord in the band. When you have John Lord in that band, it's still the older sounding sound, you know? So if you think about it, Mick Moody, John Lord are still over there. And they brought in a new guy. They kicked out Neil Murray, who's been on every album. And they kick him out and bring in this Colin Hodgkinson on.
For the UK version. Yeah.
He was in the band. Yeah. And then David Geffen and Geffen Records is like, you're not putting this shit out in the US. So there's a huge difference. You guys can tell. Listen to the album. There's a huge difference in the US version and, you know, the UK version. The album came out in the UK January 30th. The album comes out April 16th in the US. So they mixed it up. So all of a sudden, Mick Moody's bluesier type guitar is now supplanted with John Sykes' guitar god like sounds. And they bring back Neil Murray, and he's on the US version. And they replace John Lord's keyboards, really, with Bill Cuomo. And Mel Galley is the kicking ass on this album now. He's not on there too long. But there's a great, and it's probably another top five songs, a favorite of mine, Give Me More Time.
Oh, yeah.
I absolutely love that song. The way, and then, you know, we haven't really talked about it. How, what a front man David Coverdale. First of all, his vocals, he's a great soulful singer. Never in his stage presence, the way he holds the mic, he looks like he commands it. Very, very powerful. And there's a great performance. I think it's top of the Pops there, the British show. They do, it's basically lip sync, but they play Give Me More Time. Check that out. It made me love the song even more. It's such a kick-ass version.
Well, yeah, I'm right there with you. Guilty of Love is a great song. All or Nothing, Spit It Out. But it really, the audience was captivated by the three singles in the U.S., which was the title track, Slide It In, which has an instantly recognizable guitar riff. Love Ain't No Stranger, which was a huge hit. And Slow and Easy, which is one of the best songs they've ever recorded.
Everybody comes back to that. When they learned of Whitesnake and Whitesnake became big, people went back because the other one selling in the United States was Slide It In. So like you said, people thought that, oh, that must be their first album. And then everybody picked up on Slow and Easy. And then you could see the video for it. And that song, it just kicks ass. There's something still about it. That I always find funny. I think Coverdale is like the most British sounding singer that I like. Guilty of Love. Guilty of Love. Right?
Yeah.
The previous couple albums, Would I Lie to You Just to Get in Your Pants? Right? Mm-hmm. That British voice. I think it's prevalent. You can hear it, but it's got that soul behind him, that power behind it. He can hit you with the melodic voice and the power and then the screaming he could do. He can do it all. Quintessential frontman, really.
Absolutely. You know, and again, you know, he's a very, you know, his lyrics are very with the sexual innuendos, like Spit It Out, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, it's just, it goes throughout the whole career for Whitesnake. A fantastic album. To me, this is their best album they've ever released. But you're also starting to hear, you know, with the, you know, this album comes out in 84, but going with the times of Van Halen with Jump and I'll Wait, the song Gambler, synthesizer, mm-hmm. keyboard,
yes.
Much different than the earlier stuff. In fact, that was the lead track, the first track on the UK version. It wasn't Slide It In like it was on the U.S. version. And I still remember playing Gambler in my front yard on my boombox with my cassette, just jamming it all the way as loud as it could go. Because it's got this funky, weird intro mm-hmm. with the keyboard. And it just has got this march, this drum beat march with the music just going. And then, of course, you know, like you said, Guilty of Love, Guilty. Which is a great song. You know, Spit It Out, All or Nothing, Hungry for Love, Give Me More Time, which is kind of like the bookend with Slide It In with the guitar riff in the beginning. It's just, it's amazing. It's an amazing album.
Yeah. Again, it's the guitar riffs, if you start listening to some of their songs from the early days to this, you can, it's almost like an, I think I can pick it up. So if I don't hear the vocals and I hear the song, I'm like, oh, I can pick that. That's a Whitesnake song. Almost like a, like a, like how you can identify AC/DC right off the bat when you hear it. It's very, and there's a lot of that. Spit It Out's got that. All or Nothing's got that. Give Me More Time's got that. Slide It In's got that. That riff, stop, drum, stop. You know, it's in so many of their songs.
And there's that one riff. Bam, bam, bam. Bam, bam, bam. Oh, it's just awesome.
And then his voice makes it better.
Yeah.
Right? He's just... And this is the thing, you know, the way he conducts himself, the way he's on stage, taking the microphone, turning it upside down and pumping it and singing it to it. And he like getting all passion and stuff. I mean, so underrated as a front man.
Next is the big one, is the album that finally they were able to break through the U.S. with. The image of the videos, which is just as important for Whitesnake as the music is. I don't know, you know, truth be told, if Whitesnake maintains their image of the band that was in the late 70s, early 80s, this album doesn't do anything.
No.
Okay. Does not do anything. Tawny Kitaen, you may disagree with me, you may not, but Tawny Kitaen is just as much responsible for this being a huge album for them as the music is. Okay. When you think of that first video with Stole the Night with her, and then into Here I Go Again with her on top of the Jaguars, and then Is This Love, where she's wearing the suit coat with no bottom pants on or whatever. She is just as important. When people think of Whitesnake and the popularity that they rose from with this album, of course, they'll think of Here I Go Again and Still the Night and all those songs. But within a minute of that conversation, they talk about the videos and they talk about Tawny Kitaen.
Yeah, that, I agree with you. I don't know if they could have made it without one or the other. Right. I think a hot Tawny Kitaen and the music of Danger, Danger is not being selling 8 million albums.
Right.
Okay. But combine the two, a great album, a great image. And, you know, you kind of recognized all the players. If you liked hard rock and metal and were buying Circus magazine and stuff, you recognized who Rudy Sarzo is. You recognize who Vivian Campbell is, you know, and you kind of picked up on who these players were. They all looked like perfect for that image. And then there comes the part that, you know, everyone seems to forget now, but all the shit that they got for being a Zeppelin ripoff when they come out with Still the Night. And I was, and I'll say to you right now, it's a better song than Black Dog, because for me it is, but I know it's blasphemy for some, but it's a better song.
It's a great song. And I remember this controversy because it was, I remember standing at the grocery store as my mother shopped, and I'm reading about all the criticisms from other musicians and readers of the magazines, whether it was Hip Raider, Circus, whatever it was. When Adrian Vandenberg comes out and says, because he did say this, that he didn't know Jimmy Page to use a violin bow.
Yeah.
How do you grow up in Europe and not know that Jimmy Page used a violin bow during Dazed and Confused, during the live versions of Dazed and Confused?
Not just Dazed and Confused.
Well, yeah, but that's pretty much what, you know, what he was, you know, that's that when people think of Jimmy Page and the violin bow.
You're right.
Yeah, they think of that. But not just that, but like when he did that in a video, and think about it, Zeppelin hadn't even been gone for 10 years at the time. So, you know, there's still a very emotional...
And the song that you're playing is almost exactly like Black Dog.
Well, it's more like, well, there's parts of it like almost kind of like Kashmir too as well. you know, with
it, it was with Black Dog yeah. for me. I mean, that it sounded like, but regardless, he knew that, but they were getting a lot of stuff. And I remember when we started this episode, I was telling you that I was saying to my brother and them, oh yeah, this is a better band. Now, mind you, at that point, I was, you know, maybe a freshman or eighth grade or something. I was still, Zeppelin wasn't, I knew Stairway to Heaven and Black Dog, right? I knew Zeppelin 4. And again, they're easier to swallow and to pick up on and learn at that age where I'm at. Whitesnake songs like Still the Night and Here I Go Again, they're a lot easier. I mean, by far, Still the Night is probably the longest song they've had now. They've ever done. It's at 6 minutes and 38 seconds.
At this point, yeah, you're right.
Right? So you're not getting those huge monstrosities that you would hear on other albums. They're right to the point. They look good. They sound good. They look brand new. I remember the album.
Over the top. The imagery was so over the top with Rudy Sarzo licking the bass, you know, and Adrian Vandenberg with this great blonde hair. Vivian Campbell, you know, who just came from Dio.
Freddy Krueger on the drums.
Tommy Aldridge on the drums. But what really starts to define, it really kind of started early on, and it really came through on Slide It In, and now here we are with the 87 self-titled album. The one word that you could describe Whitesnake's music that you couldn't do with any other band during this period was the sexiness of the videos, but the music had a sexy tone to it.
Sleek.
Yeah, sleazy, sexy tone. You know, like just the way the arrangements were. A band like this, or a band that had that sexy tone to it, really hadn't existed since Zeppelin, because Zeppelin kind of had that tone too, with the way, you know, Plant sang the songs, the way he approached the music. It was very reminiscent of that. And for whatever reason, they kind of got a pass that maybe a band like Kingdom Come didn't get during that period, where Kingdom Come was basically shunned immediately when they released Get It On, which was, I think, 88 or 89. But, you know, Zeppelin on that Still of the Night video, and a lot of the music was very Zeppelin influenced at that time. And it really kind of furthered the... They certainly were never friends, but it furthered the gap in the relationship between Plant and Coverdale. So much so that Plant started referring to Coverdale as cover, what was it, Cover Page? Yeah, Cover Page. In interviews, because he felt that he was copying a lot of what Plant did, and that remained, that disdain for one another remained for a long time, and only probably over the last decade have they been kind of, you know, reconciled their relationship. But there was a frosty relationship between the two of them. And then it even furthered when Page got so sick and tired of Plant saying no to a reunion, and then later started the Coverdale Page album.
Now, one thing I wanted to add, and I got off track, is before the album came out, do you guys have a Strawberries there? They used to sell CDs, Strawberries. There's a CD store around.
You may have something like that.
I was at the Strawberries locally in Boston. This is before Whitesnake came out. And they had a big, like, not a billboard. What do you call those things? Like a stand?
Like a cardboard stand?
Yeah. And it was Whitesnake, the album coming out. I'm like, never heard any of their music. Mind you, I was buying the Hit Paraders. I was buying all those other magazines. Like, who the hell are these guys? I never even heard of them. But I could see them, like this image that they had, and it was them from the video, like those five. And I'm like, I have to get this. What is this? It was like the shiny toy. Like when kids aren't supposed to have like alcoholic beverages or things that are for adults, but they make it shiny for a kid. I'm like, what is this? I don't even know if this is any good, but I get to buy this album. And then I saw the video and I was like, I definitely got to buy this. So just the image itself, I was into. Picture perfect, right? And that's without Tawny Katane. That's all with me knowing any song by this band. And I jumped on it. I'm going to say something else that you know, I know we do the Zeppelin Chronicles together, buddy, that you're going to find blasphemous. I prefer Coverdale over Page. over. I prefer Coverdale over Plant.
Let's just move on. I'm not even going to recognize that statement.
I do.
What are you fucking talking about?
Better singer.
No way.
Yeah. You know how a lot of people don't, a lot of the old British Guard are not big Zeppelin fans and stuff. A lot of people find Robert's voice grating, or his antics, or his stuff. I still love Robert Plant. I love Led Zeppelin. Obviously, you know that. But there's nothing except like anything I would hear out of David Coverdale singing. Never be like, oh, Coverdale's not doing a good job, or Coverdale like that, or Coverdale's being annoying. Just for me, I like him better. It fits my style. I like him better. And I always thought when I first got into him, like, oh, this guy is new. How could he dare compare himself to, you know, Robert Plant? It's embarrassing. Shut your mouth. Don't get into a fight with Robert Plant. You look like an idiot. But I didn't realize later on is the backstory. This guy was in fucking Deep Purple. The guy was kicking ass in the 70s too. So they knew each other before Whitesnake became this, oh, new Zeppelin ripoff, right? So they must have bumped into heads in circles and stuff. Probably had no problem with it. And the problem is eventually in that 80s time period, Zeppelin was the love of all those bands, and there was a lot of Zeppelin ripoffs. And Robert probably had enough of it. Well, guess what, buddy? If you don't want to fill the void of that music or play that music, other people are. And he got annoyed with them. And one of them was Coverdale, you know, plus the MAME and the way you do like play with the microphone. Yeah, there was some showmanship, right? And competition going on there.
I don't know. I think the range with Plant alone is more, has more depth than Coverdale could ever dream of, in my opinion.
I don't know. Regardless, they're both fantastic.
Yeah, they're both great frontmen and great singers. But this album, getting back to it, didn't come without its drama. If you notice, Slide It In came out in 84. This came out in 87. There was a big gap in between this. And what started out as a great relationship between David Coverdale, Neil Murray, and John Sykes ended up not being a great relationship, because during the recording of this, Coverdale developed a sinus infection that affected the tone of his voice, so much so that he couldn't sing for a long time. He had to rest his voice. He had a lot of issues. I think there was some surgery involved.
Mm-hmm.
So as Sykes was chasing this tone prior to the recording and finding it with the help of Coverdale, there was rising drama within the band. If you listen to a lot of the early stuff that Sykes played, like Tigers of Pantang and Thin Lizzy, you hear a guy trying to find his sound. And it's almost like comparing Randy Rhoads to what he was in Quiet Riot to how he found his sound in Ozzy Osbourne. So it's that kind of, you know, comparison. Sykes, if you listen to the album that he did after he left Whitesnake, Blue Murder,
yeah,
you hear that tone again, and you really hear why Sykes, or how Sykes, influenced this 87 album, because mm-hmm. that Blue Murder album is tremendous.
Yeah, it's a good album.
So during this time of recuperation for David Coverdale, there started to be some bad blood between John Sykes. Coverdale made a statement. I still remember reading this interview when I was a kid, that none of his bandmates came to visit him or show support during these, what David described as a very dark time in his career. And there were rumors and rumblings of him and the producer at the time, Mike Stone, who I believe produced the Slide It In album, looking for a singer to replace David Coverdale, which I don't know how.
Well, I'll correct you on that. That was
a rumor.
That was the rumor, was that Sykes had taken over in the production area. And he went up to that guy, the A&R guy, the famous Geffen A&R guy. I think his name, John
Kolodner. John Kolodner.
Yeah. And was like, hey, maybe we just get another singer. And then Coverdale's hearing about what he called it's doing. And they're both control freaks and great musicians. And probably sad that They didn't get to do more together. And Coverdale's like, hey, John, fire him. And then he kind of told me how to get fired. And I supposedly Coverdale ran to his car and then Sykes ran down.
Yeah.
And like was like, open up. And he's like, yeah, I'm sorry, man. It was his idea. Got to go. Took off.
Yeah, there was a big to do about this. I remember when this album came out, of why none of the members that replaced them played on the album. And basically Coverdale just kind of collected Rudy Sarzo, who was, you know, in Ozzy Osbourne and Quiet Riot. Adrian Vandenberg had his band Vandenberg, which had a mild hit in 1981. I think it was called Burning Heart, maybe 83. Vivian Campbell had just left Dio, and like Rudy Sarzo played in Quiet Riot and also the early days of Quiet Riot, and also with Ozzy was Tommy Aldridge. So that's kind of how the band formed. The only two songs that you're able to hear the guitar players on is Here I Go Again, which was Adrian Vandenberg doing the guitar solo, and Vivian Campbell on the re-release of Give Me All Your Love. Give Me All Your Love Tonight.
The mix in 88.
Yeah, the mix. Vivian Campbell does the solo. But like a lot of their albums, they had three different versions or four different versions. They had the U.S. version, which reached number two in the U.S., which is a huge feat for a hard rock band, especially on their seventh album, when they've been around for close to a decade at this point. But it featured the Crying in the Rain song, or Crying in the Rain version, which was on an earlier release. It featured Here I Go Again, which was on an earlier release. Give Me All Your Love, which is what I said before with the Vivian Campbell. And then also, they had a lot of different singles. Like when you used to buy the cassette single, remember those? And they would kind of replace the 45. They had different songs on there. So one of those songs was You're Gonna Break My Heart Again, which was pre-released before, I think it was on the Come and Get It album, I want to say. And then also I Need Your Love So Bad, which was, I believe, on Saints and Sinners, which was a song off of.
I thought it was Looking for Love.
Looking for Love was another one. Looking for Love, right? But I Need Your Love So Bad was also a pre-release too, as well. I'm trying to remember what album that was on, or when it was released. I think it was it was actually released as an extra track on the Japanese version of Slide It In. But Looking for Love was also You're Gonna Break My Heart Again. So again, they're one of the few bands that went back into their catalog, because let's face it, I mean, if you're Coverdale and you know these songs are really good, why wouldn't you want to redo them, right? Why wouldn't you want people to hear it in an updated version of what you're doing? So that was the motivation behind that, I believe, to kind of hear or have people hear those songs. But that was a gigantic album back then. Gigantic.
Yeah, it made them go become headliners. The first concert I ever saw, I told you. And put them up to a different stratosphere. They were the it band at the time, you know, because their music wasn't, I don't know. I mean, although it was more popish, there was like good musicianship and good pop sensibilities, but it wasn't poisonous. It wasn't laughable to the rock critics.
Yeah. It was a mature sound.
And they had everything going for them. The look, the sound, the music, the vocals, the band, videos, they were on a roll. And for all those years that Coverdale was like, I got to get big in the U.S., I got to get big in the U.S., he finally hit it. And then everybody in the band that made the album that he finally made it with got kicked out. So bye-bye John Sykes, bye-bye Neil Murray, and Ansley Dunbar. Bye-bye. You're all gone. So now the guys in the video are all of a sudden playing this stuff live, right? And that's what you get.
And the sad thing about what you just said is none of the members in the band ever recorded a song together. Like that band that you know in those videos, those three videos, never did a song together, never recorded a Whitesnake song together.
No, because the next album, you've already got another,
right?
You know, replacements already else coming in.
So Adrian Vandenberg, again, health problem with his wrist, which required surgery, which is why Steve Vai was brought in to do a lot of the workload. Vivian Campbell decided not to stay in the band. Tommy Aldridge and Rudy Sarzo were stayed in the band and were a part of it. But Steve Vai came in to record the parts for Adrian Vandenberg because Adrian Vandenberg could not play on the album. And it completely changed the tone of the songs and the tone of the album. It had more, instead of that full sound that you heard on the 87 album, it still kind of had that, but it was kind of more progressive and more kind of thin in terms of the guitar tone. And that's kind of just Steve Vai. But the problem I have with the production of this album is I remember reading a review and reading interviews.
And we're talking about Slip of the Tongue.
Slip of the Tongue, yeah. Was the fact that none of those guys were ever in the studio together. They would send their parts in and then a guy would mix it. So if you really listen closely to the 87 album and this album, there's a lot of air and a lot of what I call space in between the instruments that you couldn't avoid getting because of the way it was recorded.
Because you had one guitar guy playing all the parts.
Right.
So you had Sykes and Whitesnake, and you had Vai on Slip of the Tongue.
Yeah.
Versus, look at the difference in the sound, because they would always, off the earlier albums, even slide it in, because Galley, or whether it be Slash Moody, would play off each other, and Galley and Sykes would play off of each other. And then Marsden and Moody would have, there was no ego there. Somebody would take a lead, someone would take a solo. They would switch it up. And there's always that, you know, I know what I can do, you know what you can do, let's help each other out and make the song work. When you get one guy doing it all, there's no second guitar playing going, no, let me take this, I'll do this. Or it's just one guy's vision. And unfortunately, I think, now mind you, who am I to say anything? Whitesnake sold 8 million copies. But I think it's not sounding guitar-wise as good as the other previous songs. As good as the previous albums.
Yeah, I think you're right. Vai's a phenomenal guitar player, but it just doesn't work in Whitesnake. And I know some of the singles they released, Now You're Gone, Deeper the Love, fantastic songs.
Deeper the Love is a favorite of mine.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it. It's so sleek. Oh.
In Full For Your Lovin', again, great track. Previous release.
That completely was different song.
Completely different. But it really, again, here's a band that was that old school blues band. Then, you know, getting a little bit edgier as the albums went by. The albums came, you know, in the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s. Then having this great record that redefined their sound with Slide It In. Then having this gigantic monstrosity of an album with 87, which became more of a sexier style with the arrangements, to this band that all of a sudden was trying to find themselves again because Adrian Vandenberg wasn't going to be on the album. Steve Vai came in. And, you know, since the Slide It In album, you had, well, they had dual guitars for a lot in the late 70s, early 80s. And Sykes had that sound where, you know, he could play that stuff. Vai didn't have that fullness in his tone that you needed, I think, in Whitesnake. So, you know, it did very well. It was successful, but there was just something missing. If you really want to up the game on the Zeppelin comparison, just listen to Judgment Day. I mean, it's basically a Kashmir ripoff,
yes.
Which I was not too happy about.
I like the song, though.
It's a good song, but it's still kind of like, you know,
yeah. Building like that, right?
Yeah.
Sailing Ship's pretty good. I like Kitten's Got Claws, but in Fool for Your Loving, it's just look at the videos.
Yeah.
Look at the two videos. If you look at the current video, I shouldn't say current, but like the newer version of the song, the video, you're going to get like a seizure. It cuts to everybody like super fast. And like every time it goes to one of the musicians, they're doing something like a gimmick, whether sliding your guitar over your neck, licking your bass, you know, putting your guitar on the ground and playing it like the piano. Like everything is so sleek versus the original version of two guys just jamming up and singing chorus with the guitars and really playing passionate. It got too slick. Even Tawny started becoming like way over the top, like her outfits and stuff started getting over the top. But, you know, David's started getting shoulder pads like a football player. Right. And he had those suits and it just became too hair metal.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. It kind of became what they were chasing. They were chasing U.S. success. They finally achieved it. And now they got sucked into being very image conscious, which, of course, they were with the videos in 87, but even more so with Slip of the Tongue. And then after this album, after the tour ended in 1991, Coverdale decided to take a break from the music business and broke the band up.
Yeah. And don't forget, though, the other part, too, is like they brought in Mike Klink from GNR fame. To produce this. And I think bringing in different people, different sounds, whereas you didn't hear us talking about any complaints about the albums when you had the same band members and you had Martin Birch producing this band. Like, I know what to get out of this band. And he could do the old style and he still had a hit with, you know, Slide It In and bring it to the more modern. So I think if they stuck with him, I think they would have been better off. But that's just me. And you're right. They didn't really do anything. They put out a greatest hits in 94. But from 89 to 97. And
Coverdale decided to move forward with the project with Jimmy Page, which is a phenomenal album. A great, great album. I love that album they did with Jimmy Page. And there is rumors that they recorded another album that's never seen the light of day that I know David and Jimmy have been talking about re-releasing it. It got shelved because in the late 90s, Page and Plant decided to tour together. And, you know, you can't have a Coverdale Page come out when he's on tour.
Oh, no.
No, 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 no. You can't do that. And a little tidbit. I know the first run, they did a Plant solo song. And they did a Coverdale Page song, which I believe was Shake My Tree, which I can't imagine Plant singing Shake My Tree from the Coverdale Page album every night in arenas across the country. But that's kind of what happened. Then Coverdale does resurface in 1997. They call it a Whitesnake album, but he was kind of forced to do this by the production company or by management, whoever, you know, the record label, to name it as a Whitesnake album. But this really is a Coverdale studio album, a solo album. And it's not bad. It's definitely Coverdale. But
it's got Vandenberg on it.
It's got Adrian Vandenberg. It's also got Denny Carmassi, who I believe was in Heart for a while. And I also think he was in, oh, I can't remember the name of the band with John Waite and Jonathan Cain, The Babies. I think he was in The Babies. And I think also, too, Joe Hoekstra, I think, plays on this album. He does.
Wasn't he in Montrose? And I think, Hagar?
Yes.
And Sammy Hagar?
Yes, he was in Montrose. You're right.
And he played with Randy Meisner, too.
Right.
A big Eagles. And that means he played with, like, Kim Carr and Stevie Nicks and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Derek Sherinian also is featured on this album.
Oh, yeah, Derek.
So it's kind of like a forgotten album. He also releases another one, Into the Light, later on, I think in, what was it, 99, I think he released that. But he's, you know, releasing his solo stuff, you know, Whitesnake.
Just to put something together, just because the whole Zeppelin stuff, Tony Franklin's on that album.
On the Into the Light?
Yeah. But no, that's a solo album, let's be honest.
Right. This is what kind of he was doing. You know, in between breaks with Whitesnake, and after the turn of the decade, you know, he gets the itch to put some more music out under the White Snake moniker.
Started doing a lot of, what do you call it, live albums.
Yeah.
Started coming on, compilations started coming out.
Right. So Good to Be Bad, which features Doug Aldrich, as does Forevermore. This is kind of late in the game for Whitesnake. Great albums. Fantastic. Good to Be Bad is a great Whitesnake album. And if you like the tone of Doug Aldrich, which has a lot of similarities with John Sykes, I think you'll enjoy it. Red Beach also plays on this too, as
Yeah, so they go back to that dual attack that they've been known for. So you got Red Beach and Doug Aldrich, the two guitar guys. Mm-hmm. And that's the Whitesnake I want to see. Yeah. Two guitar guys playing off each other rather than one guy doing all the work on the album.
And that continues throughout the last few moments or the last few albums for the band. Joel Hoekstra takes over for Doug Aldrich. Red Beach continues to play. There's a lot of changing parts. Their last album they just did, Flesh and Blood, was released in 2019, I believe, on Frontier Records. They also released a Purple album, which features Whitesnake covering the songs that David Coverdale sang in Deep Purple. Joel Hoekstra, I think that was his first album that he did. Tommy Aldrich came back in the drums. But here we are, current day. You know, Whitesnake just canceled the tour with the Scorpions, which also featured an opening act, Thunder Mother from Sweden. But this is the band. This is their legacy. And it is a underappreciated, I think. I don't feel people realize the importance of this band, where this band came from, the music they made, how big they were in the late 80s. I just hope, like we said at the beginning of this conversation, Coverdale is able to come back and go out the way he wants to go out.
Yeah, it would be awesome to be able to catch him one more time. I think they were going to play up here at Hampton Ballroom in New Hampshire. I've seen them a couple times. David Coverdale is, to me, one of my favorite guys that I grew up in music from my era, you know, that I got to see performed and had a career during this time. So, you know, for me, Coverdale coming back with Whitesnake going out on his own terms would be really special.
I hope that happens. Yeah, I hope it does, because I think with the longevity of his career, I think he deserves that. And hopefully his health improves. He's able to get back out there, maybe in some limited capacity. He's able to do a quick run of the States and the UK. But hopefully he's able to come back and come out the way, or go out the way that he always envisioned.
Do you know what I like? Whitesnake and Coverdale throughout time has been getting a lot more respect over the last few years of his life.
Yeah.
You know, him getting inducted with Deep Purple. I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, you can say with a lot of people that complain about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, how certain members don't get in. They've been in for a lot longer than David Coverdale's in Deep Purple. But to put him in with Deep Purple, only doing three albums, that's a show of respect. Okay. And then just his personality online. If you're on Twitter.
Oh, he's great.
There's probably nobody funny. He is the complete opposite, as my buddy Tom says on Shout Loudcast, opposite of how Paul Stanley is on Twitter.
Yes.
He's got a fantastic sense of humor, fucking cheekish, as they would say over there, right? Funny as hell. And, you know, and he's got exactly what you want to see in somebody that you want to, like, he makes himself more likable.
He does.
The way he has his personality is. And I love that about him. He's become more endearing over time. And the band Whitesnake, I mean, they're a big part of something as simple as being a big part of what was that movie? Old School.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Here I Go Again, coming back and resurgent. That song has lived on. And, you know, when the whole hair metal stuff was laughed at and joked and, oh, get rid of that. And Whitesnake has kind of survived that and continued to thrive. And I like it, because anybody that sits and goes, oh, Whitesnake, that's a hair metal band. Dude, you have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And they deserve respect, and they deserve some people to give that that, especially the older stuff, a chance, and you'll really be happy with what you discover.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're a fan of Zeppelin, it's the Stones, Faces, if you love blues, you
Deep
will
Purple,
like, you'll like
Rainbow,
that early stuff. You'll
all
love
that
stuff.
Yeah.
As we close, what's your favorite album, favorite song?
Tough, because I would say, how's this? I'll say I like Slide It In from the big three of the MTV era, which is Slide It In, 87, and Slip of the Tongue. Slide It In is their best of those three. And I'd probably say Come and Get It just above Love Hunter.
I would say I'm with you. I would say Slide It In out of the big three. I go back and forth between Slow and Easy and Give Me More Time.
Oh, that's my favorite. Give Me More Time.
Yeah. And then from the early days, I'll go with Saints and Sinners, and I like Victim of Love.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say something as cool as Steal Away from the EP. Go listen to that, guys. You're going to be like, holy shit, listen to that guitar. Are you if you're a sucker for Slide, oh, it's just so kick ass. And then probably Till the Day I Die off of Medicine Man.
Yeah.
Something like that. Oh, those are fantastic riffs, fantastic stuff. But I can't recommend Old Whitesnake enough to people.
Me too. Me too. Zeus, it's been a blast, man. I enjoyed the conversation. I'm glad we did this. I know we were talking about it for a bit. Yeah. And glad to finally tie up this conversation. Love this band. Love what they're all about. Love the history. Lots of scars in this band. Lots of changes. But Coverdale, man, is a battler. He's a lifer. And, one of the great performers of our time. One of the great singers of our time. And wish him good health. Wish that he can come back sometime soon. But that's been our discussion on the legacy of Whitesnake.
Jay, thanks for having me. I always have a great time talking with music with you and the Hook Rocks. I wish you continued success and good health to you and all your listeners, buddy.
Thanks, man. Everyone, that's Zeus, one of the good guys in podcasting that I always love talking with. I'm Jay Scott. This is The Hook Rocks. Take care of each other. We'll talk soon. Thanks.
I love the blues. They tell my story. If you don't feel it, you can never understand. So many times I've thought about it, and now I know just what it means to be a man. Every day I realize you can see it in my eyes. I never wait. Cause I love the life I live. I'm gonna live the life I choose. You gotta understand, I'm walking in the shadow of the blues.